Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
I want to go to Pather Tobin from Aintu, who joins me on the line. Good afternoon to you, Pather.
Good afternoon to you.
Pather, you're on for different reasons today, of course. You had a bit of a scare, I suppose, recently when it comes to skin cancer, something we've been talking about quite a lot, particularly during the summer, with a lot of messages going out telling people, don't, you know, just because the sun isn't shining, you know, make sure you cover your skin as best possible or wear some sort of factor or whatever it happens to be. When did you first notice this, Pather?
Yeah, so about last February or March, I noticed that there was a small scab on the top of my scalp, and it was only about the size of a fingernail. Now, I do a bit of gardening, I keep a couple of hens, and you clock your head off a tree now and again, and you might get a wee scrape. So I didn't pay much attention to it. It wasn't really healing, so in around April, I became a little bit concerned about it, but because of the lockdown, obviously, there was an understanding that the doctor's surgeries were either not, you know, functioning or were under fierce pressure. So I wasn't rushing to the doctor's surgery at that stage. And as soon as the lockdown eased, then I got straight into the doctor.
Okay. When you say you were a bit concerned about it, at that point you knew it wasn't a scrape or a scratch. You knew it was something a little bit more sinister.
Yeah.
So you wanted to have it looked at and you wanted to see a dermatologist, I suppose.
Yeah, so I had actually another little bump in my head previously that I had gone to the doctor to talk about, and the doctor told me that that one was fine. So this was another one beside it. I wasn't sure whether it was just a repeat type of kind of skin tag, or was it something different? So I went to the doctor anyways, and the doctor wasn't overly concerned because there was very little pigmentation around it, but he gave me a biopsy anyways. And like even the week after I went to the doctor, he took the stitch out of the biopsy hole, and I asked him, like, had the results come through, and he said, no, yours is probably not going to be serious.
I've been in the situation, Pat, where it's like waiting for your leaving cert results. It's dreadful. It's a dreadful situation to be in.
It is. So 10 days later, anyway, I got that call that nobody wants. And so the doctor proceeded to tell me, he says, Pat, I've got bad news for you. It's a mid-sized melanoma tumour.
Okay.
And obviously, he was telling me the detail of it. About 2 minutes in, he kind of realised that I probably wasn't consuming that detail. And he says, Pater, do you want me to speak to your wife?
The blood must have drained from your body at that particular moment.
It does. A serious dark cloud just, you know, descends on you. And within a matter of a few seconds, you know, the whole order of the world changes in your perspective. So now, my own wife had melanoma skin cancer herself 6 years ago. And, you know, we had some experience of it. And we also had some experience that you can get out of this.
The prognosis is good, isn't it, I suppose? Well, I would like to think the prognosis, because you've caught it reasonably early, I suppose, is the prognosis good for that?
Yeah, so what, basically, very quickly then, we got into a situation where I had to get a disc excised from the top of my head, about double the size of a 2 euro coin. That was taken out, and
so what? They took the skin, is it?
They literally took the skin of a whole disc of it down about just under a centimeter, cut it out of the top of the head, obviously with local.
And what did they do? Did they put a graft in? I'm sorry to be personal, but did they put a graft in, or did they stitch that back together, closed, or something?
What happened was they left it open for about 7 or 8 weeks, and until I got the details of, you know, whether or not they had taken all of it or not.
Yeah.
And then it became clear that they may not have got all of it, and that they needed to go in for more. So about 7 weeks after I had the initial excision, they went in and took about the size of the palm of my hand out of the top of my head.
Oh, my.
So
I'm sorry, Pater, because I haven't seen you recently, obviously.
Sure.
And I know you're a man who doesn't have a huge amount of hair. You shave your scalp, all right? So that would be very, very visible, very painful, I imagine, because the skin would be kind of stretching. So what's there instead of the size of the palm of your hand? What's actually there at the moment?
So right now they've taken the skin grafts from my thigh. And
okay.
They've replaced the chunk that's taken out with the skin grafts. And there's a bandage over at the moment. It's a very slow healing process because they go down nearly a centimeter deep, and it's obviously quite sore.
You
can't really sleep well with it because
even when you kind of frown, I imagine it kind of pulls the skin a little bit, and it's quite probably sore.
It's, You don't realize it, but yeah. your the skin on your scalp moves.
It does, of course.
Around
yeah.
when you laugh, when you talk,
facial expressions, even you know, frowning or whatever it happens to be.
And
yeah,
when
of
you
course.
Lie down on the pillow, it slides a little bit. And when you've got a grasp there that's been held, I suppose it's slightly tenuous fashion. It's just pulling at it all the time. But anyway, thank God, like I got results back from that particular excision, and they've told me that. That excision, and they also took a lymph node out of my neck. They told me that it looks like they're fully clear.
So you don't have to have chemotherapy or anything like
well,
that?
Well, no. Oh, now I just have to have another, I have to have a PET scan to see has it travelled anywhere else.
Okay, hopefully it won't have.
And if that's clear, I should hopefully manage not to go through with...
Okay, well, that's good news, Pater, and we're all glad to hear that. I'm particularly glad to hear that as well. Because,
thank you.
Because I'm quite fond of you in politics. But I mean, but in saying that, going forward, I suppose, for other people, the message is, I mean, you got that because you're a man who shaves his head, and how long, by the way, I mean, when did you lose your hair quite young?
I probably lost lost a lot of my hair probably about 10 years ago, and just about 5 years ago, I said, just to bite the bullet.
Shave the head. And I suppose the important thing is, you know, wear a hat or a cap,
well, there's a couple of take-home points for me out of all of this. First of all, if anybody out there has something on their skin, they should really just get it checked out, whether or not... If a lot of men especially are kind of like they save up 4 or 5 ailments before they go to the doctor. Do you know what I mean?
Actually, I was in the same situation. I drive a car. When I'm driving a car, I drive in a very awkward fashion. I have my hands completely over the steering wheel and I drive with my wrists bent, right?
Yeah.
And subsequently, I ended up with these kind of dots on my skin.
Right.
And one of them got a bit crispy kind of like and started getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it became itchy, and then one day it started to bleed.
Wow.
And I decided, I went to my own doctor, and in fairness to him, within 2 weeks he had me with a dermatologist. So again, like yourself, I had to have it removed, and I had a couple of other ones that were there, and I was asking her, what are these dots? I always were led to believe they were age spots.
Yeah.
That's what I was told. And she went, well, no, there's no such thing as age spots. That's just a nice name for them. You know, these are things that you should always keep an eye on if they get bigger or something. And it's because, again, my hands and the exposure. She asked me a couple of things. Do I ride a motorbike or whatever it is? It's because your hands are always exposed. You know what I mean? But it's the way I drive the car.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That exposes them more so to the sun. So we need to be conscious of all these kind of things.
Absolutely. And obviously, you know, it sounds really obvious, but sun cream and hats. Like, you know, skin cancer is the most common cancer in Ireland. There was 10,500 cases of non-melanoma skin cancer, I think, last year. Mm-hmm. About 1,100 cases of melanoma last year. And melanoma has trebled in 20 years in this country. And 160 people die from melanoma on an annual basis. And many of those deaths are preventable with just, you know, proper precautions. The other really...
I mean, the concern at the moment, Padre, I mean, the good news for everybody is, by the way, we've got better at detecting with early diagnosis. That's why we're seeing more and more people. There's always this argument out there, why are suddenly more people getting cancer? They're not. We're better at diagnosing cancer now. Years ago, people wouldn't have been diagnosed and they would have just died. But we're better at diagnosing cancers now. But the problem is, over the last 7 months, this has fallen back badly, Pato, with the lockdowns, with the restrictions. I mean, I understand, you know, public health warnings. And I understand, you know, public health is obviously the thing that's most important. Mm. But we got to put things into proportionality. We're losing sight of non-COVID-related problems.
Absolutely. And this is one of the reasons why I decided to go public with this. And one of the reasons why we actually launched, B&A2 launched a campaign there 2 weeks ago on this. Because right now, because of the focus on COVID, there's been such a cutback with regards to delivery of other services. So we know from with regards to cancer screening services, you know, bowel and cervical were closed for a period of time. They're up and running, but
mammograms were gone for quite a substantial time.
And breast cancer is still closed. So like, what really frustrates me is that you can go get a haircut, you can be in the physical space of a barber, but you can't actually get a breath check at the moment. And
why is that, Pater? And I spoke about this. We spoke about something the other day, which was a father not being allowed in when his wife was being told that she was going to lose her baby, right? And that wife, you know, we spoke to her and she was saying like the scary thing about it was 3 weeks after she had lost her baby, the two of them went out for a meal to a restaurant. She says, we can sit in a restaurant with a waiter serving us, but we can't go to a hospital where you would imagine, you know, hospitals are sterile places. They're trained to deal in sterile environments. Why we had to close these things or stop these things in the first place. And we had an oncologist on here from the UK about 2 months ago, actually. And he told us that for every 6 months of lockdown and restrictions, they imagine, although it's unquantifiable, there could be 60,000 deaths in the UK long term. That could be over the next 5-10 years of undiagnosed cancers and ailments.
Well, I spoke to a doctor just last week, and that doctor has told me that, thankfully, he has no coronavirus deaths, but he has three patients who have had their treatment significantly delayed and significantly reduced as a result of this. And he honestly believes that those three patients are not going to make it. And
so that will shorten their lives, yes.
He thinks that these three particular patients are going to suffer, that this cancer won't be able to be stopped. And, you know, they may hopefully get a number of years left still, but that their life will be significantly shortened. And, you know, what I think is that the government, unfortunately, has tunnel vision. So it saw this wave of horrific deaths across Europe coming in our direction. And as a result, it's just literally shut down everything.
We've got a knee-jerk. But look, I think, Potter, we all agreed with that knee-jerk reaction at the start because we didn't know what we were dealing with.
Sure.
But at this point, we've a very good idea what we're dealing with. And we're seeing the same trend across Europe where there's a lot of cases, but thankfully less deaths. And, you know, there's experts out there who have given the reasons for that. I mean, and the reasons are glaringly obvious at this stage. I think we need to be very cautious in the way that we now restrict our life, because as Professor Collins from Manute recently said, you know, life is about quality, not just about quantity. In other words, you know, he had elderly people, he deals with geriatrics, and he had elderly people coming to him saying they wanted to die because they'd no quality left in their life.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And we know another example would be that people with mental health issues, obviously, over the last number of months, the vast majority of face-to-face, in-person consultations have actually stopped. And, you know, we also know that in the month of August, the number of suicides that happened in the state were higher than the number of people who lost their lives to COVID. And while we need to be cautious and always with the eyes open, making sure that, you know, there isn't a radical change in the trend with regards to COVID, we also need to make sure that, you know, there's equality within the system. That,
well, proportionality is the word, isn't it?
There's balance. There has to be balance. Like, you know, if a person's life is under threat from cancer or from mental health or from any other aspect, they're entitled to treatment like anybody else in this country. And, you know, and I will agree with you. I honestly think that we need to learn to live with COVID. And this is not something that's going to pass in the next couple of months.
Well, it doesn't look like that's what the government want to do, Potter. It just, I mean, I know the new policy is out either today or tomorrow, the learning to live with COVID. But it seems to be more like learning to live with restrictions and lockdowns more so than learning to live with COVID, because, you know, obviously there's different experts out there who have different theories about how we should tackle this problem. But it seems to be here in Ireland, we certainly have stricter measures than most of Europe, considering the amount of cases and deaths we have, particularly ICU and deaths. But what we're doing every day is waking up with a new problem and making decisive decisions and knee-jerk decisions every day, rather than having a strategy.
There's no long-term strategy. The strategy is, right now, is we'll see what happens in the next 7 days. And if the country continues on with the strategy of see what happens in the next 7 days, well, then there's going to be absolute radical damage done to whole significant sections of Irish society. And, you know, whether it's the health service that we discussed here or whether it's, you know, the social fabric of our society, and AIMTA is the only political party that has asked and calls for the opening up of pubs around the country. There is, you know, there's whole elements of society that are really suffering in a significant way that will have big ramifications.
But what is the problem? I mean, when you look at it, just finally, because I don't want to keep you too long, but in relation to, say, what we're seeing with cancer diagnosis and everything else, and there was a senior doctor there from the HSE in the Irish Times over the weekend, gave his opinion. Now, whether he be right or whether he be wrong, he gave his opinion and believed we were overreacting completely in the proportionality and the way we're dealing with this. And he talked about quality of life, etc., etc. He was immediately, and I actually put it up on Twitter, I said, let's see how long it takes the HSE to discredit him. Within 5 hours, the HSE had distanced themselves from his comments. So in other words, anybody who even challenges it, it doesn't matter how credible they are, be they a doctor, a GP, a surgeon, it doesn't matter, anybody who questions it is immediately discredited. Yeah, why is that?
I think Ireland's biggest curse is groupthink in political terms. You know, I'm one of those people who believes that we should be cautious around COVID, that we should socially distance where we can, we should work at home where we can, we should be careful.
Common sense approach,
We need to listen to the voices right across the spectrum, and people need to be able to say that without in confidence. People shouldn't fear for their I know of a doctor in the north of Ireland who got a letter from their doctor council to literally complain about the fact that they had opened their mouth around concerns that they had with regards to the way the state is dealing with COVID. And if we say to people that their jobs are in danger if they articulate a sincerely held view, well, then we can guarantee that we will delete those sincerely held views. And if we have no section of society questioning the majority of the group think at any stage, that's a weakness.
The group think is NPHET. Let's be clear about that. Okay, we know who the group think. They're unelected people, obviously giving advice to the government, and the government then should take that advice. In Northern Ireland, there's been questions asked today why, for example, the Northern Ireland government are not taking the advice of the chief medical officer because they won't lock the country down again. But in saying that, is it not a case that NPHET, and I'm sure they're very intelligent people, but they have a particular view, is it not time that we should change that on a regular basis, that group of people on a regular basis, to different people, or to mix the views, so we can all come to some better conclusion? Because, of course, the economy, although let's not put money before lies, but the economy is important, because if the economy goes down the toilet, which it will if we continue down this route, we will have no money for the health service.
Well, I would be of the view that politicians have a responsibility and to make decisions. And unfortunately, in this country, politicians like to outsource that decision-making. They feel insulated from any difficult questions that might arise.
Are they afraid to make decisions?
Are they afraid that
if NPHET says, for example, lock down Dublin, and they make a decision not to lock down Dublin, and let's say the debt rate rises by 5 people the following day, that they'll get the blame. Are they afraid to make decisions?
I think they are. I do think that we should, as politicians, seek to get our information from experts and people in the fields who have studied for years and who understand these things. But I also believe that politicians have a responsibility, a democratic responsibility, to the people that they represent. They need to take a bird's-eye view over the whole of the country, over the whole of society, and they need to have the bravery to be able to make decisions when necessary. And I think, to be honest, within society, there's a couple of things happening. There's a growing number of people who've come to the understanding that we do need to live with this, and we need to be able to open up more. There's another section of society, which I find really interesting, who believes fully that we need to have restrictions, but actually are not living in that way at all. They're actually breaking all those restrictions themselves anyways. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's very, very interesting, that people who want to be pure, but their behavior is not representing that at all. I would go back to the main point. We do need to be careful, but society needs to function. We need to live. We need to be able to make a living. Businesses like pubs need to be able to make a living. Farmers who are living on their own, who may not speak to anybody all day, need to be able to go to a social scene to be able to communicate and discuss how they're feeling for their own mental health. And
indeed, if you find something on your scalp, for example, that you're concerned about, you shouldn't have to put off waiting 3 or 4 weeks. You should be able to go to your GP and get a referral to a hospital as soon as possible.
Absolutely. There needs to be no more blockages within the health service whatsoever to anybody else is suffering.
Well, somebody had sent in a text and said, Breast Check mobile unit is already 90% isolation unit ready. Heard someone on the radio in July tell PK, Pat Kenny, I assume, that they had to modify mobile units for COVID and they'll be ready around October. This is pure laziness.
Yeah, so I think what happens as well within the health service, that there's just been nobody willing to take that decision, willing to say, get this up and running right now to make sure that these people survive, that these people get the treatments that they need in an orderly time. Unfortunately, the political situation in Ireland is very, very centred in one space. All the political parties are now, operating in lockstep, in unison with the one voice.
Gobby with the days we had opposition, huh?
Well, and I'll tell you one thing, Niall, the issue here is the lack of diversity within the media as well. Because the truth of the matter is, if a politician does have the backbone to speak, there's very few media outlets other than your own that will actually allow for that person the oxygen to be able to get their message across.
And well, we have contacted Simon Harris before that, but Stephen Donnelly's office, and Stephen, by the way, was on this show regularly before he became Minister for Health. Couldn't get him off the air. But we've contacted his office on numerous occasions, so much so I went public on Twitter and asked him to come on the air, and he refuses point blank to come on the air and talk to us.
Well, unfortunately, I think Stephen Donnelly has lost a significant level of credibility over the last while.
Well, he's been retweeting Jedward over the weekend. That really shows the level we're at now, doesn't it, to be honest with you?
And that's not unusual for a Minister for Health from North Kildare, to be honest.
All right, listen, Padder, I wish you well, and I hope that continues to be good news for you, and I hope nothing else happens in that direction. And put your hat back on, I suppose, is the best advice. Padder Tobin, thanks very much indeed. All right, loads and loads of people texting in, wishing Padder well. Padder from AIM2, the leader of AIM2, and obviously believes that the media need to be talking to more people on both sides of the argument when it comes to proportionality around COVID-19.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.